ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm Alan Kohler, and I want to take you straight to the source. Every Friday, I sit down with the people running companies, shaping industries, and influencing the Australian economy to talk risk, power, profit, pressure, not just their success, but their strategy and what it means for the rest of us. Because that's business. Search, subscribe, and stay ahead. Find That's Business with Alan Kohler on the ABC Business Daily feed, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcast.
Donald Trump says Iran is negotiating with the US to end the war. Iran says, well, that's fake news. So, are there efforts underway to bring the conflict to a close or not? And who's winning anyway? Today, Jonathan Panikoff from the Atlantic Council's Middle East program on Iran's stronghold on the Strait of Hormuz and why it will only stop the fighting on its terms. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Jonathan, Donald Trump, he likes to issue ultimatums. He loves a deadline.
A tense standoff is taking place between Washington and Tehran after the US president gave Iran a 48-hour ultimatum.
Donald Trump is warning if Iran doesn't fully open the Strait of Hormuz, the US will hit and obliterate their various power plants.
Such a move would be a dramatic escalation in the conflict and further deepen the growing energy crisis.
But this one, to target the Iranian power plants, what, it was so significant that he couldn't go through with it? What's your assessment?
Well, I think the way that he would probably put it is he's giving the Iranians an opportunity.
They want very much to make a deal. We'd like to make a deal too. We're going to get together, but we'll at some point very soon meet.
But look, the reality is there was a lot of concern that, frankly, if the United States hit that type of target, it would significantly escalate this war in a way that could see an even more intense targeting of Gulf energy infrastructure, of pipelines, of facilities. I think the one that's really scaring people is desalinization plants in a region that almost solely relies on them for fresh and clean drinking water. So I think at the end of the day, he's willing to extend the deadline. We'll see if the 5 days is a literal deadline. We'll see if he sticks to it, or if at the end of the day, he comes back and extends it again.
We're doing a 5-day period. We'll see how that goes. And if it goes well, we're going to end up with settling this. Otherwise, we'll just keep bombing our little hearts out.
Yeah, Iran, of course, it just showed no signs of capitulating to this threat from him. As you mentioned, a real concern would have been if Iran had, as it said it would have, targeted these desalination plants in these Gulf nations, which, quite frankly, they're in the middle of the desert. They can't live without.
That's absolutely right. If you start hitting civilian infrastructure, clearly infrastructure that, yes, is just for the civilian population, like desalinization plants, it's going to bring this type of conflict to a whole new level.
Well, Donald Trump, as we mentioned, has extended his deadline by 5 days. Now, he reckons the US is in some sort of meaningful discussions with Iran to end this war.
We have had very, very strong talks. We'll see where they lead. We have major points of agreement. I would say almost all points of agreement.
But Iran says, Jonathan, that the talks are basically fictional. So who are we going to believe at this point? Yeah. Are there talks or are there not?
So I think there probably will be talks. There seem to be some indications that the Pakistanis will host the talks, that the Turks are actually going to mediate the talks. There seems to be a rumor, at least here in the United States, that Vice President Vance will represent the United States and that Kalibaf, the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament, will represent Iran. If that's true, He is a hardliner, but he's a longtime institutional figure in Iran itself and now is Speaker of the Parliament. So look, I expect that there may be some sort of talks, but I'm not sure that I would expect any sort of immediate resolution or even a near-term one.
Yeah, so it sounds like the talks aren't quite as advanced as Donald Trump would like us to believe. Is he panicking at this point, do you think? He's pretty worried about the financial impact of all of this, isn't he? That's why Iran thinks that he actually said negotiations were already underway so he could manipulate the market.
I think he's certainly incredibly concerned about where we are today. Look, I think certainly the rattling of the oil markets, especially due to the energy constraints given the Strait of Hormuz and the Iranians quite meaningfully discovering just the level of leverage and power that they have over the straits is incredibly meaningful and incredibly problematic. There's no really great solution to that. Even a military solution is a really challenging one. So look, I don't know if the president is panicking, but clearly things are not going strategically as well as I think he would have hoped at this point. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that early on, there wasn't a clear strategy, right? And so operationally, the U.S. and the Israeli militaries are doing incredibly well in hitting their targets. Strategically, at the end of this, it's not clear to me, at least, that the Iranians are going to be in a worse position, even if they don't have a lot of the strategic and military assets that they once had. They could still end up ending this conflict with significantly greater leverage and power projections into the region.
Wow. So it's clear, is it, at this point that Iran controls the strait and there really is very little that Donald Trump can do about that without casualties? I mean, his closest allies haven't come to his aid at this point. And the other thing, Jonathan, which is pretty significant, is that Trump has even had to remove sanctions on Iranian oil, which is extraordinary.
It is. And that is the one that I think has shocked a lot of us here in the United States. We've seen Donald Trump do something that no president had considered or would have done and just totally pulled them off temporarily, but also not just Iranian, but Russian sanctions as well to try to get oil prices down. I think it's unlikely to have a meaningful impact, maybe a minimal one around the margins, but it really has been, even if temporary, a fairly shocking decision and one that's taken a lot of people aback here in the U.S.
Well, Jonathan, why don't we consider now then Iran's capabilities going forward, given this war has now been going on for many weeks. Now, Donald Trump says Iran's military has been literally obliterated. Oh, well, that's one of his comments.
We've obliterated their navy. We've obliterated their just about everything there is to obliterate, including leadership. Their navy's gone. Their air force is gone. Their anti-aircraft equipment is gone. We're flying wherever we want. We have nobody even shooting at us.
Clearly, that's not the case, is it?
Well, it certainly has been significantly diminished. I think the president is right that its naval assets are significantly diminished, both the standing navy and the IRGC naval assets. Its ballistic missile capacity is greatly reduced from what it was. I think there's still some open questions about the nuclear program. But look, no, I mean, it's certainly not obliterated in the very definition of the word. It is still very much there. And so you saw this most recently, I think, by the firing of the Iranian missile over the weekend to Diego Garcia, which is much farther away than anything we were led to believe that the Iranians could or would do.
It's fired two ballistic missiles at a joint UK-US military base on the island of Diego Garcia, nearly 4,000 kilometres away. Both were unsuccessful. But
the actual most important point is you're now talking about Iran demonstrating a capacity to be able to hit most of Europe. And I think that really changes the equation, not to mention the thousands of drones that it still has in its inventory. I think diminishing the ballistic missile capability is really hugely important and really impactful for the region. It's why you've seen a lot of Gulf states that still want the U.S. and Israel to keep pushing to really destroy as much as possible. But that doesn't mean that Iran, wounded though it is having its no military capabilities. They're still managing and they're still alive, and that's to say nothing of asymmetric capabilities that remain, like its cyber capabilities or its terrorist capabilities.
Just explain that a bit further, Jonathan, about this ballistic missile. So it can travel 4,000 kilometres, but what the world thought, Iran only had the capability for a missile to travel 2,000 kilometres. So was this actually a surprise to all analysts out there that this capability exists in Iran?
Yeah, there's still some questions about exactly how it traveled. In other words, did it lighten the actual missile and the payload to allow more distance? Did it somehow increase the rocket fuel? Or was it just, frankly, that they always had the capability, but you really did have a fatwa that was prohibiting it? In other words, a prohibition issued by the supreme leader, and whether or not that was confusing capability with willingness. I think right now it's certainly true that the demonstration took a lot of people aback. But either way, where we are today is an Iran that has clearly demonstrated, even though it was only once, the ability to strike much, much further, much greater distances in a very targeted way.
Yeah, but not to say that it would want to target places like the UK.
No.
You know, France, Germany, but you can.
That's right. Look, there's no indication that Iran is planning to target, let's say, European countries, but clearly this was in part a message. Be careful how much you get involved. Be careful how much you decide to become part of this conflict, because you too could be targeted in the future.
Well, Iran is, of course, also continuing to strike Israel. Mm. And it does seem that Israel's interception systems are coming under pressure, right? Because a ballistic missile hit a town near its main nuclear research facility. Mm-hmm. What does that tell us?
Look, it tells us that the Israel system, which we know is frankly among the best in the world and excellent, is not perfect. And I think we've seen this before. We know the Israelis are also probably short of interceptors themselves. They're having to be careful in how they use them, just as the Iranians are having to be careful and are probably short on ballistic missiles. And so they're both being rather opportunistic. But I don't think there's anybody, frankly, in the Gulf or elsewhere who wouldn't welcome being under the types of interceptor shields and dome, Iron Dome and the Arrow system that Israel has.
Jonathan, as you say, third parties could start to try to mediate discussions to bring this war to a close. Tell me, do you think Iran wants that?
I think the Iranians right now would only be interested in ending the war if it's on their terms. Mm. And I think their terms are going to be a very, very high price. That includes, for instance, a guarantee that this will not happen again, that neither the U.S. nor Israel will strike them. It probably includes some level of nuclear enrichment if you want to actually engage in the nuclear file. And it's not even clear that that would be part of this. They might say, no, we're not going to be willing to negotiate over this. We have to actually have more negotiations after this, just as there were beforehand. I think it's going to require, certainly, in their mind, some sort of financial compensation for the war. In other words, a list of things I'm not sure the U.S. is going to be willing to give. So the bottom line is Iran believes it's winning this war, that even as its military assets have been significantly diminished and many of them destroyed, what it has done is demonstrated to the world that it really can hold hostage, for instance, the Strait of Hormuz, that it has leverage, that it has a power projection that many might not have expected. And the knowledge of how to rebuild all of these systems is still there. And you're talking about what is almost certain to be a much more hardline government going forward if the guards really have the level of power and sway that they certainly seem to right now during the war. Mm. So for all of those reasons, I think it's very unlikely that Iran is going to be willing to just end the war unless it's really much on their terms.
Wow. And who do you think is winning this war, if anyone?
Look, I don't think there's probably any winners in this type of war. I think the reality is, yes, I think Israel is significantly safer. I think the U.S. and I think some of its allies will be significantly safer. But a lot of who wins is going to be dependent on how it ends. I think that is critical. If you were to end today with Iran still having some of the ballistic missiles, when you have uranium and the 400 kilograms of uranium still buried and Iran still having access to it, I think that would be a huge problem for the United States. It's a huge problem for Europe, a huge problem for Israel, a huge problem for Asia. But we're not at the end of the war yet. And so I think we're going to have to take some time and still see how it actually concludes.
And Trump's new deadline, what do you think? Is that meaningless or could we see a serious escalation of the war come Friday?
Yeah, I think you certainly could see an escalation. I think there's still real questions about whether the United States seeks to take Karg Island, for instance. About 90% of Iranian oil flows through there at some point. And then you could also have an operation along the margins of the strait. So on Friday, do I think the deadline is meaningless? No, I think President Trump probably is looking to buy time here, but I'm skeptical that he's made a decision quite yet as to what comes next.
Jonathan Panikoff is the director of the Scowcroft Middle East Security Initiative at the Atlantic Council. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed, audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. To get in touch with the team, please email us on ABC News Daily at abc.net.au. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.